Flying cars might be a long way off, but the world is changing faster than our brains can keep up. And my next guests are trying to keep up with that with a really an ancient technology, storytelling. A Seattle-based Scout.ai is a company that uses science fiction as a way to prepare businesses and governments for the future. Its CEO is Barrett Anderson. Barrett, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And we're joined by a couple of science fiction writers who have worked with you. Ramez Nam is author of the Nexus Trilogy. Hi, Ramez.
Hi there.
Brenda Cooper, besides being Chief Information Officer, City of Kirkland, you have written many short stories and 10 novels.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Barrett, what's an example of how science fiction can be useful for the government?
Well, so great question. So when we first started Scout, we used a Kickstarter campaign to kick things off. And as a part of that campaign, we actually put together a series of fake headlines from the future.
And so fake headlines.
Yeah. So we basically just spent a couple of hours thinking about, okay, what are some of the emerging technologies that we're seeing now? And how might they actually intersect with culture and society or in interesting or unexpected ways in the future? We predicted, this was in 2014, and we predicted that Hillary Clinton would have won the election because of the efforts of two Facebook engineers who were able to change the newsfeed algorithm to the effect that in key swing states, no one noticed it, but voters were incentivized to vote for Hillary. So clearly, if the U.S. government and the elections officials nationwide had been looking at that and thinking about that, if Facebook had been looking at that and thinking about that more clearly, they could have foreseen that, you know, based on the way that they think about development within the company, they actually, any two developers working together at the time could have made a change to the newsfeed algorithm.
Now, that could sound like good policy analysis. What's the fiction part of that?
Well, how that didn't actually happen.
That's true.
It turns out that the reverse of that happened. So it's easy to say now that that sounds like policy analysis, but at the time it was pretty provocative, right? So Donald Trump hadn't even entered the race yet.
Yeah.
Let's see, another one that we kind of put together was, this hasn't happened yet, but I think I will be interested to see what does happen, was that 23andMe had been bought by LinkedIn.
It's the genetic research
exactly,
company.
Exactly, so that everyone's genetic code was now available to employers so that they could screen them based on genetic predisposition to diseases, other markers. So,
and the genetic example is interesting. We had the film Gattaca. I don't know how old it is now, 20 years. I thought Gattaca, it was a good film, but I thought the science was terrible. But it gave us this idea that employers and society could discriminate against you on a genetic basis. And a few years after Gattaca, Congress passed a bill called GINA, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, that says that employers and health insurance companies can't use your genome against you. Now, of course, that could be repealed, but I would connect the passage of that bill in Congress directly to public attitudes changing because of Gattaca. So the right story, positive or negative, can sway people in a way that no number of policy papers will ever.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think the other way that I see science fiction used frequently, especially by the business community, especially among the world's top technology CEOs, they're all huge science fiction fans, right? And so Elon Musk and, Vinod Khosla and Jeff Bezos, for
Paul
example,
Allen.
Paul Allen, they're all huge science fiction fans. And they are all using the science fiction that they've read as inspiration and also as kind of a blueprint for the things that they built, right? So the iPhone, for example, first existed in Star Trek and then was actually brought to life by Apple. Elon Musk tweets all the time about his science fiction inspirations. Like just last week, he tweeted, I should probably articulate the philosophy underlying my actions. It's pretty simple and mostly influenced by Douglas Adams and Isaac Asimov, right? So he's also cited Ian Banks and Frank Herbert recently. So, I mean, these guys are all using science fiction as this kind of collective map of a world that they could be building, and they are building it right now. So it's super interesting. If you're not actually reading science fiction, you don't really understand or have the same understanding that science fiction fans and science fiction readers and these tech CEOs do of like what they're trying to create.
As we've said, sometimes science fiction is scary. Is there technology being developed that scares you personally, Barrett?
A lot. So I think that the thing that most frightens me right now is the use of surveillance, particularly in China, specifically using social media and facial recognition technology. So over the last few years, the Chinese government has essentially kicked all Western media out of the country. And they have this new citizen control system that is a social credit rating system. They actually use your online activity, so who you're friends with on online social networks, who you're talking to privately, what you're saying privately in your personal messages to them. And they use that not just to affect your ability to buy a house, for example, but also your ability to travel internally or externally, internationally. China is expanding economically quite aggressively at the moment, and they've started to use that kind of censorship in the United States as well through their economic ties. So, for example, they recently, Marriott Hotels, of which the Chinese government is a part owner, recently fired an employee for liking a tweet that referred to Tibet as a country. So that's the kind of thing that I see in the most near future, or actually right now, starting to kind of take root through this increasingly pervasive surveillance that, you know, specific instances of the internet combined with national control create.
I would want to add the Internet of Things, which is, you know, all of the devices in our homes, the Alexas and the other devices. They provide a huge amount of value and a huge amount of utility for us. But I think they're also a risk because of security risks. In my job as a CIO, I see how many both
the city of Kirkland, chief information officer.
Right. So as I'm responsible for security for the city, I see how many state actors come in and try to, you know, attack us in many, many ways.
State actors are attacking the city of Kirkland?
Sure. I mean, not actors in the sense of actors in a play, but in the sense of other states. One of the things I heard in a meeting just today is that on one of our sites that just simply sells permits, there are more attempts to actually connect to the site from hackers than there are from people trying to buy permits. And so that's what our life is like. And so you have to imagine that these devices at home and our connected cars and our other things, of which there will be more and more because of the utility, are also always at risk because of security. And so
you have a worst case scenario. You're scaring me. And I'd like to know what specifically should I be losing sleep over? What could happen?
For example, someone could easily hack in. If you have an Alexa at home, someone could easily hack into that device and use it to listen to your conversations when you're at home. That would be like a pretty simple thing for like a good hacker to do.
Or if you have autonomous cars and you can hack into either the traffic systems or the cars, probably more likely the cars, you could certainly snarl up and damage, you know, traffic throughout the city fairly quickly and easily.
I'd add one more technology, talking about autonomy, drones. And I think, honestly, I think this technology is mostly positive. But when you said drone 10 years ago, you thought about the U.S. military with an $8 million Predator drone. And now you can buy an $800 drone that's super capable or an $80 drone. And it's not long. This is still radio remote controlled. They can be jammed, but it's not long until you'll have computer vision on them, autonomy. You can load up some GPS coordinates and a face and use facial recognition to go fly a small explosive right at somebody in a crowd. I think drones will do far more good than harm. They're being used for humanitarian purposes. There's a network of blood delivery in Rwanda that we don't have here, actually. But you will see scary stuff like this happen.
Can we talk about something hopeful now, please?
what
technologies are giving you hope?
I'll pipe in and I'll say the internet gives me hope. And this is a strange thing to say right now, because right now we're really terrified about the effect of Facebook and Twitter on elections, about the effect on spreading hatred. But I look at America, and something that science fiction failed to predict entirely was that we would have legalized marriage equality, that we'd have pot be legal in, 12 states now, about to be legal in Canada. And I see that as being really driven primarily by increased empathy. And that started with TV sitcoms that had gay characters on them that were sympathetic. And it spread to the ability to connect online, share videos on YouTube. Yes, hate is spread that way. But I think more impactful, but less noticeable, is that empathy is increasing that way as well. And I think that's a trend that hopefully will continue.
Yeah, I think that you bring up a really good case about the internet, and I think it's the same with almost any technology. For example, I mentioned some of the dangers in autonomous cars, but at the same time, they're going to let us get to work and be able to be productive on our way. They're going to enable us when we are old to get to the doctor without needing help. They're going to fix a lot of our traffic problems potentially. So almost all of these technologies really have both sides. And that's where science fictional storytelling can help both illuminate the scary sides of them and show the values and the advantages of them. Because once you show a technology actually being used in someone's life, either for good or for evil, as Mez mentioned earlier, you can really begin to activate people's imaginations and help them understand the potential implications of that technology. So then they know how to invest, how to vote, how to think, what to be worried about, or at least what to talk about over dinner.
One more I would add is synthetic biology. When I think about, you know, what are the biggest challenges that we're facing globally right now, climate change is probably number one, right? So we have a finite number of resources on the planet. But synthetic biology actually allows you to create essentially materials out of nothing, right? And so you can actually grow them in a lab in this way that we have never been able to do before, enabling us to, you know, cut... You know, there's a company called Impossible Burgers, I believe, that makes burgers that taste just like meat, right?
I had one the other day. They do taste like meat.
Yeah.
And they're really good.
And, you know, like, well, if you look at that, like, okay, cows produce a huge amount of contribution to climate change globally. These are the kinds of things that I think can have a really huge impact. It's still really early on in the industry, but it's going to be really exciting to see how that field develops.
And I'd pipe in that every technology has been used for good and bad, right? Trains got used in the Civil War and then in World War I to move troops to the front line. And part of the reasons World War I in particular was so bloody and killed so many millions of people was you could for the first time move millions of people to the front lines. Yet we would say, oh, trains are a net positive to our lives. So almost every technology has spectacular downsides and sort of less obvious or less spectacular, less dramatic upsides. And I think the news business and science fiction have similar biases, which is that fear or scary or shocking things get attention. So of course, most science fiction, I mean, any story has to have like a conflict, a challenge the protagonist has to get over. So there's always going to be some terrible thing going on. No one's going to flip through pages of a book of like, and then the world got richer.
And then people adjusted.
Yeah, poverty went down, democracy increased. Like, that's boring. We're going to read stuff about horrible things happening. And then the difference in some sci-fi is does it end with some hope or not? And the news business, I think, has the same question affecting it.
If our current time were a novel, how would you end it, Ramesh?
Well, I'd say truth is stranger than fiction. You couldn't write this administration. You couldn't write Trump as a character. Everyone would say that it's totally, totally implausible. But I'd probably give the dark but hopeful ending of some bad things happen, but there's a turning point. You know, maybe it ends with the Democrats taking the House in 2018. Let knock on wood or whatever it is this counter is made of. Or maybe not. Maybe they don't win and we have a bigger challenge in front of us. But you can paint the long arc of moral history, as it were.
I would say we're past the point where climate change is going to affect us. I think we know that based on our actions already, we're going to see some significant changes. And I would say we're going to survive those changes, but that they will drive us to have to figure out how to work together because it's naturally a global problem and we're going to have to address it globally.
Barrett, you said a book cannot end with, and people adjusted. So that's you don't have that option.
I think we have a lot of big challenges coming up ahead of us. And so, I mean, I guess if I were writing, I'm the only one here who's not really a science fiction writer. So I guess I may be the wrong person to ask this question. But if I were writing the science fiction novel, my ideal science fiction novel of the end of the world, it would be, you know, we have a lot of big challenges that we're facing. We have climate change. We have you know, these like very intense nationalistic competition really heating up. We have surveillance capitalism. We have these monopolies that are kind of like creating more and more and more and more inequality. And despite all of that, we also are creating all of these technologies that actually are the very things that will allow us to solve those problems. So in my ideal science fiction future, we would all organize using the internet to bring all of those things together and deploy them and overcome the kind of moneyed interests that have kept those problems from being dealt with.
Ramesh, will you please tell me more about something you said? Empathy is more impactful than hate.
Yeah, so if you look from 1970 on, There's a set of questions that have been posed to Americans, but an ongoing study of, would you invite a person like this over to dinner? Would you vote for a person like this if they were in your party and you agreed with them? Would you be okay if your kid married someone like this? And those like this, would you vote for a president, as I said? Those like this are Black, Hispanic, gay, Muslim, atheist, Jewish, Catholic. And on those questions, Americans say yes more and more and more often every year. Acceptance of difference, tolerance is going up in America. And a big part of it is that new cohorts, new generations are radically more tolerant. You look at millennials, they're radically more tolerant and more liberal on other topics too. But it's also the case that as people get older, we think that they get more conservative. They don't. People, as they get older, become more tolerant of others. Right, the older generation is still less tolerant than the younger. And so that is just a 40-year, almost 50-year trend in America. It seems to hold in other countries, too. So I think the combination of cities that are these melting pots where you see different sorts of people and media, whether it's TV and movies or Facebook and YouTube videos, are making us aware of people who are different than us and starting to see them as human and part of our tribe, whereas 40, 50 years ago, we saw them as other and a threat. And I think that trend will continue as far as the eye will see.
What can my industry, what can journalists, what can the news media learn from science fiction?
I think you can learn how much power you have, that stories are actually more important than facts in terms of persuasion, and treat that as a power that you must use responsibly. And so you must align those stories with what's actually happening. We have this notion of if it bleeds, it leads, right? That's what drives clicks. That's what drives ad views. And that gives people a sense that the world is scary. And people who are scared vote for authoritarians. They shift more conservative. They're more cruel to people that are not like them. And if people understood that violent crime in America has dropped by half since 1970, if that was the kind of news they got, they would be, I think, more tolerant, more welcoming, and more liberal overall.
Is science fiction generally more hopeful than what we hear on the news?
Not,
I would say it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, I think not always. You get a lot of dystopian science fiction as well as positive science fiction. I think what you can do is utilize some of the techniques of science fiction in the news. When you're talking about technology, think about how it might actually affect people and tell very short stories about that. It sounds a lot like some of the things you do at scout.ai.
Whether it's dystopian or optimistic, most, even most dystopian stories have a sense of heroism and of overcoming challenges. If you go to the Hunger Games, it's a very, very dystopian world, but it's a hero's journey of overcoming challenges. And I think when the news media puts out negative stories, they don't end it with solutions. They don't end it with, what can you do? How can we overcome this? And maybe that would give people a little bit more sense of activation and of hope and of less helplessness. And again, I think if people feel that way, they'll be more open-hearted, more kind to others, more tolerant, and think more about the future politically and less about preserving their present or past.
Yeah, I mean, in the last years at Scout, we've reported a lot on misinformation, right? And how the Trump campaign and Cambridge Analytica and Russia all used tech platforms to help change the outcome of the election. And yet in all of that work, the thing that I've found and really like been surprised by is how much of an impact we've been able to have, right? So we've interfaced with a lot of very high, you know, like politicians, candidates, political candidates, and just this really small team, right? We've actually been able to change a lot of the world and help the world understand this problem a lot more. Yet the thing that I find among the people that I know, right, all my friends and kind of acquaintances, is that they all feel more hopeless than ever. And so one of the things that I'm really interested in, and particularly one of the things that I've been just thinking a lot about personally, is how can you teach people that they are very powerful and that you can actually have a very large impact on the world through your work or through your activism? Because I think a lot of people just feel so discouraged. And that's one way that stories in the news media, especially, but also in science fiction or fiction generally, I think can be extremely powerful, is to showcase those stories of places where that is happening. It's very important.
We've been talking, speculating, learning about science fiction and hope with Barrett Anderson, Ramez Nam, and Brenda Cooper. And Barrett is with Scout.ai. Thanks to all three of you for leaning into this with me.
Thank you.
For having us.
Thanks very much.